Hello, this is UCL Uncovering Politics, and this week we ask what drives ideological disagreement in politics. How far do people on left and right disagree with each other because they have fundamentally different moral intuitions, and what are the implications for how polarisation can be addressed? Hello, my name is Alan Rennick, and welcome to UCL Uncovering Politics, the podcast of the School of Public Policy and Department of Political Science at University College London. Polarisation is a feature of contemporary politics that worries many observers. People on left and right, or in US parlance, liberals and conservatives, seem sometimes to live in different worlds, with fundamentally different views on how the world is and how it should be. But what exactly is the nature of these disagreements? In particular, are they grounded in fundamentally different intuitions about right and wrong that we're born with or learn early in childhood? Or are they more dependent upon the circumstances in which we live in the present and on the media through which we learn about the world around us? Well, a series of new studies by two of my colleagues here in the UCL Department of Political Science, Jack Blumenau and Ben Lauderdale, is shaking up our understanding of these matters. And one of those authors, Jack Blumenau, who is Associate Professor of Political Science and Quantitative Research Methods, joins me now. Welcome, Jack, to UCL Uncovering Politics. It's great to have you on. And could we drive straight into the overarching question that you're asking in this work? What drives ideological disagreement in politics? What for you does that question mean, and why does it matter?
Well, thank you very much for having me, Alan. I think this question means to me that we have to think about the sources of ideological disagreement, so the things that make people come to disagree about political issues. And that's something that political scientists have spent an awfully long time thinking about and have many different answers to. So there are lots of potential sources of polarization, so things like differences in material interests or differences in group identity or the socialization processes that people go through in their early years. And the reason why it matters to try and understand which of these things at the root of ideological polarization is because it says something about how hard that polarization is to resolve. And so if we're interested in trying to speak more productively to one another about political issues, then it's helpful to know whether those sort of those sources of disagreement are more or less malleable. And as you said, there's this sort of particularly prominent view that's been gaining in traction in recent years that ideological differences might stem from deep-seated psychological factors, and particularly in factors that relate to people's morality, so the differences, the moral differences with which they perceive the world. And that kind of moral view of political disagreement seems quite troubling, because if it turns out that people have these entrenched views that guide their way of thinking, then it might make it quite hard to reconcile political differences because they're just coming from fundamentally opposed viewpoints rather than being something that is easier to change.
So what in particular are you asking in the papers that we're talking about today?
So we're going to talk about two papers today, and the first one asks a fairly straightforward, what we would call a descriptive question, which is just, do people on the left and the right in fact have fundamentally different moral intuitions? And so our goal in that paper is to try and develop new ways of measuring the relationship between moral concerns or moral intuitions and voters' political beliefs. And the way that we do that is by using a survey experiment of voters in the US and in the UK. And, you know, the whole approach there is based on trying to design a new way of soliciting information about people's moral beliefs. So rather than asking people to self-theorize about their moralities, we're going to ask them more concrete questions which aim to retrieve information about their moralities without asking about them directly. And we're going to use that methodological approach to comment on some of the existing claims about moral divisions between people on the left and people on the right. The second paper, and this is partly a spoiler of the results of the first paper, is that if it turns out that political disagreement actually doesn't emerge from these kind of moral disagreements of the moral psychologies of people on the left and the right. So if people actually have fairly similar moral reactions on an intuitive level to political problems, then what is it that drives the political polarization? And particularly in the second paper, what we're interested in is not all political polarization, but political polarization as it relates to the different views that people take about which issues are important in politics. So we're going to be trying to understand, you know, if it's not morality, what is it that determines which problems people see as important?
Great. So you've given us a little swoop all the way through the various steps of the argument that we're going to talk about here, which is really helpful to have at the start. Let's now go through those steps in turn and start off with the sort of theoretical underpinnings of the work. And I guess your starting point is, as you were suggesting there, this theory that political attitudes are rooted in deep-seated moral ideas, moral intuitions. Do you want to just develop that theoretical perspective a little bit further?
Yeah, so this idea comes from a very popular and important theory in social psychology, which is called moral foundations theory, which was developed by Jonathan Haidt and some of his colleagues. And that theoretical perspective suggests that people's moral values can be described according to different principles or different dimensions, or in their terminology, different foundations. And there are five of these foundations in the canonical expression of this theory. The first being fairness, so the idea that people are motivated by concerns about whether things are fair or not, whether things are just, how trustworthy people are, conceptions like this. The second is concern for care, which is really related to ideas of kindness and an attention to the suffering or needs of others. Beyond fair and careness, there's also authority, which is a concern for a deference or an obedience to social hierarchy. And the idea is that people could be more or less concerned about conceptions like that. That's three. That's taken us to loyalty. I feel like these should have a good acronym, but they don't, sadly. So that's three of these foundations. Number four is loyalty. So a concern for things like loyalty to one's country, so patriotism, or loyalty to one's community. Also, the idea of loyalty is meant to encapture ideas like self-sacrifice, so sacrifice to the collective group. And then finally, the fifth concern is what's known as the sanctity foundation. And sanctity involves a concern for things like temperance or chastity or sort of religious conceptions like piety or even conceptions like bodily cleanliness. And so the idea is that these five foundations are meant to underpin our moral sense of self, they're often described as our moral matrices. So the things that lead into lots of other judgments that we might make about moral concerns.
And where do these come from? Why those five? That feels like a slightly random list, just hearing it there. Why those five in particular?
So the theory goes that these five concerns are all linked to evolutionary challenges that people have had to overcome historically. And I won't try and outline all five of the evolutionary challenges. But the idea is that, you know, so things like a concern for loyalty to the group has arisen as people have had to face challenges that are best overcome by group-based interactions. And similarly, you know, the idea of the sanctity concern is often rooted in this idea that from an evolutionary perspective, being attuned to problems about cleanliness or problems about chastity will have had a real impact on sort of our prospects for survival in some sense. And so there's this evolutionary story that our moralities have come from these common challenges. So one of the important ideas here is that morality isn't something that is entirely set in stone from the moment of birth, but can evolve and adapt in response to environmental factors. So people will display different levels of adherence to these different moral dimensions according to things like their upbringing, their education, the different cultural traditions that they exist in, and so on. And kind of crucially for the argument that I'm going to make later on is that this perspective adopts the idea that moral judgments are made in a way that is very fast and automatic. So they're psychological processes which are really rooted in an intuitive view of morality. So when people are coming to moral judgments, they're not doing so consciously, although they're not doing so necessarily deliberately, but rather they come to these judgments in a kind of quick and effortless way without being necessarily fully aware of why they are reaching those decisions. And that's something that we should put to the side and remember for when we come back to talking about some of the methodological choices that we're making.
Well, shall we move on to talking about the methodological choices now?
I think there's one other thing to say here first, which is that there are, you know, so what I've just described is like a way of thinking about individual psychology, individual moral psychology. And I think this is a very useful way of characterizing people's different adherences to these different foundations. But there is an important political point, which is that there's this core political prediction of this theory that people on the right and people on the left of politics will put systematically different weight on these different foundations. So the broad idea is that people on the left will tend to care mostly about the what are called the individualizing foundations. So that's the foundations of fairness and care. While people on the right will tend to put more weight on what are called the binding foundations of loyalty, authority, and sanctity. And so the idea here is that people on the in different parts of the political spectrum will put these different weights on these different moral concerns. And so when they're considering political problems, their intuitive moralities will inform their judgments of those political problems and provoke them to making different judgments about those issues. And so as a result, that will lead to a polarization in attitudes across the political spectrum. And this argument's been made in very stark terms in the academic literature and seen as a sort of an important cause of political division on a wide range of issues, particularly those that are especially morally laden. But I think this is also something we see in sort of popular discussions of politics, you know, the idea that the reason why people talk past one another so often in politics, and that's often seen to be caused by just these very, as you made the point in your introduction, the people having very different sort of worldviews, very different sort of moral compasses. And that leads to this sort of breakdown of productive democratic debate as a result.
Great. Thank you for adding that. Yeah, really important point. So let's move on to the methodology of the studies that we're talking about here. And it's interesting reading the papers that you very much emphasize that methodological innovation, so doing measuring these things in new ways, is one of the important contributions of these papers. So how are these matters normally investigated? I guess we should start with that. And then what's different about the approach that you take?
Okay, so one approach would be for me to describe this, but I think that may be quite boring. And so instead of going through the methodological sort of differences in a lot of detail, I thought it'd be useful to just illustrate by asking you some questions.
Okay.
And these are questions that we...
Subverting the normal interview mode.
Yes, exactly. It makes me feel more comfortable in the questioning scene.
Let's go with this. Good.
So these are questions that we put in front of a whole load of survey respondents. Mm. And so I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions, and then we'll talk about sort of why those questions might make sense or what they might teach us.
Listener, I warn you, this is unrehearsed.
Yes, and well, people should also feel free to play along with this at home. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions and just give me, you know, very quick answer. Don't spend too much time thinking about it. So question number one, which of these is more relevant to your moral thinking? Whether or not someone was cruel or whether or not someone did something disgusting?
Oh, the first one.
Okay, so cruelty. Okay, now I'm going to ask you a second question. Which of these do you think is worse? A girl making fun of her brother for getting dumped by his girlfriend, or an employee at a morgue eating her pepperoni pizza off of a dead body?
Oh, gosh. Oh, that's tricky.
And possibly revealing. Fast answers.
So, yeah, I'm supposed to do this quickly. This is difficult. I think I mainly think the first one, but I think probably society thinks the second one. So I'm kind of feeling pulled towards the second one because that's what I ought to say.
No, that's fine. I don't think that there's a right or wrong here. And in some sense, like, your difficulty in answering the second one is quite informative, I think, because... You know, there's a clear difference between these two sets of questions, in addition to one of them being slightly more gross than the other one. Mm-hmm. The important point here is that the first question is asking you to rate some abstract principles, and you gave a relatively quick answer to that question in that care was more important to you than this idea of disgust, right? Mm-hmm. So that was your sort of moral ordering of those different priorities. Mm-hmm. When it came to the second question, though, when I asked you about specific manifestations of those two concerns, so, you know, the one about the girl making fun of her brother, that's clearly an issue that's related to care. It's some kind of violation of the principle of fairness. Mm-hmm. And the second one was clearly something about the idea of sanctity, like the idea of doing something a bit disgusting. It was hard to make that decision, right? And for lots of people who are listening, they would have... their immediate reaction would have been to say, oh, the pizza one is worse, right? Because mm-hmm. it just makes them feel very uncomfortable in some way. And the important thing there is that the preference ordering switched between the first question and the second question. So when you're asked...
So for those other people, not for me, actually.
Not for you. Well, yours was also interesting because it became somewhere close to intermediate,
yeah,
right?
Or
it wasn't quite so easy for you to say which was worse.
Yeah.
But more generally, the important point here to recognize is that when we ask people questions that ask them to explicitly reflect on their own moral concerns, that will often lead to different sets of answers than questions that aim to elicit their sort of more implicit moral attitudes. Mm.
So the first of those things is what you referred to earlier as self-theorization. So listeners might have been wondering, what does that mean? So that's exactly when you're basically reporting on what your moral principles are rather than just responding to a particular case.
That's exactly right. So when we're trying to think about what motivations are important to us rather than just responding to prompts that might tap those motivations in some sense. Mm. And so I think, you know, the important, why does this matter in some sense? Like, why would we play around with questions like this? Well, most of the evidence base that exists currently for moral foundations theory and the relationship between people's moral values and their political values comes from questions of the first type, right? So it comes from questions where you ask people to explicitly rate their moral principles. And when you do that, it turns out that people on the left and people on the right give very different answers, right? Mm. Right. And as I said before, people on the left tend to care about care and fairness, and people on the right tend to report caring more about these other features, so loyalty and sanctity and authority. I think the thing that's important to note from a theoretical perspective here, though, is that those kinds of questions, those kinds of self-reflective, more explicit questions, where you're asking people to self-assess their own moral psychologies, those are quite a long way away from the theoretical starting position of moral foundations theory, which is that people's moral judgments, if you remember the thing that we said earlier, people's moral judgments are meant to be rooted in this fast and intuitive process where people aren't even necessarily generally aware of the reasons why they're making their moral judgments. Mm. And so it seems that there's something of a tension between having that as a theoretical starting point and then the main way of measuring that being more this kind of explicit self-theorization question that we just discussed. Mm. What we do that is different is we ask more of these questions of the second type, so where we're asking people about sort of concrete scenarios and just asking them to rate which one of these things is worse. And so what we're doing there, I should add that we actually didn't write these violations, right? Okay. So the more concrete, the pizza example that I gave just now, someone else wrote that. So you can blame them for the slightly gross examples. But the idea is that what we're going to do is ask people a very large number of these types of violation questions, each of which is meant to represent a different foundation in moral foundations theory. And then by asking people those questions across, you know, from across the political spectrum, we're going to be able to understand whether people on the left and the right are more or less polarized when asked about these concrete moral problems than when asked to self-reflect about the more abstract moral concerns.
Okay, so I'm very tempted to go straight on and ask, what do you find when you do that? But is there anything more that we should say about the methodology of the papers before?
So there's one more example that I want to give you, which is from the second paper that we're going to discuss. And so again, here I'm going to ask you two sets of questions which are slightly different from one another in form. Though the example that I just gave notably didn't have any politics in it, right? We didn't ask anything that was actually related to political issues. And so one thing that we want to know is, you know, are the findings that we're going to talk about in a second, do they generalize to cases where the judgment that people are making is related to political affairs? So here's question one. Which of these two things is worse? Rising prices reduce a person's standard of living, or a mass shooting with many deaths?
The second one,
right. This is an uncontroversial position to take, which is that the mass shooting is worse than the effects of inflation for a single person. Yeah. Consider it a second question, though, where I ask instead, which of these things is a worse problem in your country? Rising prices reducing people's standard of living, or mass shootings with many deaths?
Uh-huh. So the first one.
The first one. So why?
Because there aren't very many mass shootings in the UK.
Exactly, right. So the key difference between these two question forms is that the first one is asking how bad is this problem in its individual instance, whereas the second question is asking you to consider two things, both the severity of the problem, so how bad it is, but also the frequency of the problem or the prevalence of the problem as well. And so in the second paper that focuses on problem prioritization, we use the variation in question form to again try and understand where is it the polarization comes into the process. So is it that people disagree over how bad individual instances of particular problems are, or is it more that they disagree around how frequent these problems are and therefore how big a an issue they are for society as a whole. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if it turns out that people on the left and people on the right have very similar judgments of the badness of individual problems, well, that suggests that the polarization that we see is maybe not about political psychology so much as it is about people's perceptions of the scale of these problems for society as a whole.
Mm. Wow, such big and interesting questions. Let's get to the findings then. So the first question there was around the degree to which people's left-right attitudes in fact do correlate with the moral foundations. What do you find?
Well, unsurprisingly, given the setup that I've just given, we find that the results depend on how you ask the question. Yeah. Right? So when we ask questions that get people to reflect explicitly on their own morality, so to consider these abstract moral principles, then we see large differences between people on the left and people on the right. And those are completely aligned with the traditional way of asking these questions. So people on the left tend to care more about care and fairness concerns, and people on the right tend to care more about authority and loyalty and sanctity concerns. The kind of important finding of that paper, though, from our perspective, is that when we ask people questions that aim to solicit these more intuitive moral responses, then people on the left and the right actually give strikingly similar moral intuitions. So those large differences that appear when you ask people about it explicitly, those diminish substantially when we're considering these more specific scenarios, to the extent that all voters, regardless of their political persuasion, think that fairness, care, and sanctity violations are worse than or more severe than the authority and loyalty violations. We still see some evidence of partisan difference, so it's still true that people on the left, on average, care a little bit more about care concerns, and people on the right put a bit more weight on loyalty concerns. But those differences aren't large enough to change the sort of the overall rank ordering of which foundations matter most.
So let's dig into this just a little bit further, because when I was reading through the paper, it seemed to me, but tell me if I'm wrong, that the kind of biggest difference in your findings compared to the standard findings were on the sanctity elements. And you were finding that people on the left really care about the sanctity things in a way that the more traditional way of measuring these things suggests that people on the left don't really care about sanctity. So then I was looking at the specific wrongs, the specific behaviours that you include under sanctity. And we've already talked about one of them here, which is about eating the pepperoni pizza off a dead body. And that, I can see, very clearly relates to this idea of sanctity and this is something that's just a bit disgusting. But then quite a few of the others, one of them, for example, is about a drunk person who offers to have oral sex with anyone in the bar. And I guess my intuition about this one was that's a fairly horrible thing to do because it's horrible for the other people in the bar. So it felt more like a care response to me rather than a sanctity response. And that therefore, I was just wondering as I read through, is it the case that actually you're just picking up a lot of care stuff in some of the sanctity measures? And therefore, and that's why you end up finding that people on the left also care about what you're calling sanctity.
I think it's certainly possible that some of the vignettes confound sort of two or multiple different foundations' concerns within them. They were written in a way that was attempting to isolate a single concern or a single moral foundation in each of the vignettes. I think one of the things to note here is that when we ask the more generic question or the more abstract question, we actually don't know what it is that people are thinking about, right? So we don't know how people are interpreting the idea of sanctity when asked in abstract terms. And so providing these kind of concrete manifestations of that concern is quite difficult because it means that you're trying to isolate the individual foundations. As I said, I do think it's possible that there are multiple concerns appearing in each one. But one of the advantages of our design is that we have a very large number of manifestations of each foundation. So the example that you just gave about the person in the bar, that could certainly be interpreted, as you just did, as a care concern. I don't think that's true for all of those examples, though. And another sort of weakness that we see in the existing literature is that there have been an over-reliance on a very small number of particular examples of sort of concrete moral violations. And so what we're trying to do here is to provide a broader set which allows us to make statements about the degree to which people care about those foundations as a whole, rather than relying too heavily on any given instance. I think the other thing to say here is that although, you know, we do find this unusual pattern compared to the previous literature where sanctity is seen as more important by people on the left than is true when you ask them about their abstract concerns, the other thing that we find is that for the other foundations, so for authority, loyalty, fairness, and care, we see a flattening out of the political relationship with those foundations' concerns. So we find that, you know, people on the left traditionally would express much less adherence to the idea of authority than people on the right would. And that relationship almost completely disappears when we ask about these sort of concrete moral concerns rather than asking people the more abstract questions. The same is true for loyalty and likewise for fairness. And so even though we get this difference in ordering of the foundation's importance, which might be attributable to some of the things that you described, the fact that we just see a general diminishing of the political association with the importance of each foundation is also evidence that there may not be these kind of ideological divides or sort of these morality-based ideological divides that has been such a feature of the previous literature.
Okay, good. I think I'm convinced on that point. And then I guess a second feature of this is you said at the start of that answer that the degree to which left-right ideology maps onto the moral foundations depends on how you measure things. But I think you're at least implicitly arguing that your measure is better than the traditional measure. So you're suggesting that people's moral intuitions are in fact what drive their political attitudes rather than their more thought-through kind of ideas about how they perhaps ought to, how they want to think morally. So you're kind of accepting that aspect of moral foundations theory, no?
I don't think that we're accepting that people's moral beliefs drive their political attitudes. So the purpose of this paper is to demonstrate that when you measure something that we think looks more like moral intuition, which again is what moral foundations theory is based upon, is this idea of intuitive moral responses. When you measure people's moral intuitions, the correlation between that measurement and political attitudes decreases. Mm-hmm. So what we think is that there's just much less evidence that people on the left and people on the right really do take fundamentally different worldviews, right? So it may be that they talk about their moralities in very different terms. They may articulate very different sets of moral priorities. But when confronted with specific moral comparisons, then they make very similar moral judgments.
But you are saying there, aren't you, that it's those intuitions that are then driving people's kind of real behavior, not necessarily in the political world, but in their interactions with other people, is there those moral intuitions you're suggesting are what matter?
I think that we don't have a strong view on whether moral intuitions matter. What we're trying to do is engage with an existing literature of work which says that moral intuitions are important for downstream behaviors. Some of those are political, some of those will be other things. Now, we don't have a strong dog in this fight, I don't think, but what we do think is that if you're going to make the claim that moral intuitions are important and there are important differences between different political ideologies with respect to their morality, then you should try and measure those in a way that is close to soliciting information on the intuitive nature of moral beliefs rather than asking people to explicitly self-theorize about their morality.
Yeah. Okay, so that's clear. So insofar as people have moral intuitions, those don't map very strongly onto left-right attitudes. So it seems that they are not what is driving polarization between left and right, between conservatives and liberals in politics today.
That's right.
Great. Let's move on then to the second paper. Just remind us what the question is in the second paper and what you find.
Yeah, so in the second paper, we're trying to understand, you know, given the results I've just described, what is it that is driving political disagreement? Sort of what are the other potential sources? And so in this paper, we actually provide a much harder test in some sense, because we would naturally expect there to be higher levels of political disagreement about questions that are linked to politics rather than questions that are sort of concrete manifestations of moral concerns, but not necessarily political concerns. And so in this paper, what we do is we ask people to make these comparisons between different sort of political issues. Some of those are morally loaded political issues like freedom of speech and abortion. Some of them are more sort of economic questions about things like inequality and inflation and so on. And so What we're interested in doing here is first just asking very similar questions of the form that I described before. So we're going to ask these individual instances of a problem question. And what's interesting about the results that we find in this paper is that even when we're asking people to consider more explicitly political issues, we find roughly the same pattern of results, which is that when people are prompted to think about the badness of individual instances of specific problems, the people on the left and the people on the right largely agree on which problems are worse and which problems are less worse. So there is some disagreement on the severity of particular individual problems. It would be kind of extraordinary if that wasn't the case. And so questions about things like illegal immigration or questions about abortion or questions about gender identity, we do see partisan-based or ideologically-based differences between the left and the right. But on average, the left and the right have highly correlated views about which problems are seen as worse. So the ideological disagreements that we see on individual issues are actually not large enough to yield very different orderings in of which problems are seen as more severe overall. And so, you know, what's the conclusion from that? Well, the conclusion is that voters see some problems as worse than others, but there's little ideological disagreement about the severity of problems in the individual instance level. What's more interesting than that, though, is that when we move from these questions about sort of individual instances of problems to how important is this problem in your society as a whole, there we do start to see much more pronounced ideological disagreements, particularly in the US. So we see the correlation between the views of the people on the left and the people on the right start to break down, right? So about which problems are most important. And so what does that imply? Well, it suggests that while people might have very similar judgments of how bad an issue is as an individual event, they actually have very different judgments of whether that issue constitutes a serious problem in society. And if you think back to the question that I asked you before about inflation versus a mass shooting, The thing that you said when we went from like the individual instance question to the sort of how big a problem is this in your society question is that you said mass murders are fortunately very rare, and of course inflation is very common. And what we show in the paper is that the differences in ideological polarization between those two question forms can be explained by people's attitudes about prevalence. So as people think, as people's views on how prevalent a problem is diverges from each other, people on the left and people on the right, there then is a greater degree of disagreement about how big those problems are for society as a whole. And so we think that what's going on there is that it's not that people have some fundamental moral disagreement about how bad these issues are, it's that they have similar views on how bad those issues are, but they have very different views about how frequently they occur.
So it's not that people on left and right disagree, or at least disagree very much, about whether it's a bad thing that people can't afford to eat properly because of inflation, but people on the left are more likely to think that more people suffer that, are in that situation, than people on the right think is the case.
Exactly. Or to give an example from the other side of the political debate, it's not that people on the right think that illegal immigration is a bad thing and people on the left think that it's a good thing. It's that they both think that, you know, any individual immigrant entering the country illegally may not be a great thing, but then they have very different perceptions on how much illegal immigration there is.
So that then leads on to the question, I guess, of why? What produces these different perceptions?
I think that is the next natural question, and sadly not one that we are able to fully answer in our paper. But I think that, you know, the natural speculation here, or the natural sort of theory here, is that it's something about the different sources of information that these voters have, right? So if you are exposed to very different sources of information about politics, that could very well lead to different perceptions about the prevalence of different problems. And so, you know, it's obviously true that newspapers, traditional media sources are going to give you very different sort of emphases on different political problems, which may lead you to have different beliefs about how prevalent those problems are. But similarly, you know, things like social media as well, where we see sorting into different communities of voters who may then share information about particular political problems at different rates, and therefore you may develop different views about how prevalent those problems are. So for me, it makes sense that sort of differential exposure to media is a natural explanation of what's going on here. again, that's quite a long way away from saying that what people are doing is having fundamentally different worldviews. It's that they're given different sets of information or they receive different sets of information, and that's what drives the polarization rather than some entrenched hostility towards, you know, towards the other person's morality.
What should listeners take away? What do we leave with on the basis of all of this fascinating analysis?
I think the main thing that I would want people to leave with is possibly a note of optimism. So this view that sort of moral concerns determine political attitudes can be quite troubling, because it suggests that kind of the resolution of morally loaded political debate may be intractable, right? So moral disagreements, because the idea that morality is so deep-seated, makes it hard to think that it's possible to easily overcome political division. But the results that we have in these two papers, I think, does present a slightly more optimistic conclusion, because one interpretation of the results that we have is that once you measure people's moralities in this way, when you measure them more appropriately, then differences in the intuitive morality of those on the left and the right are simply too small to be responsible for the level of political animosity that we see between ideological groups, or the level of political disagreement that we see. And so I think that's more optimistic, because it implies that polarization isn't attributable to these kind of fundamentally incompatible attitudes, but rather political disagreement is more closely related to the ways that people process information. And if that's true, then it seems to me that sort of the information side is something that we are more likely to be able to do something about, and therefore may have an easier route through to productive dialogue between groups on different sides of the political spectrum.
Well, it feels quite difficult sometimes at the moment to find reasons for hope in the world of politics, but you've given us some there, Jack, so thank you so much. Really fascinating. I mean, incredible piece of research, this, both of these papers, and with real practical implications and positive, hopeful implications as well. So thank you so much. We've been discussing two articles co-authored by Jack Blumenau and Benjamin E. Lauderdale. One is called Liberals and Conservatives Rely on Very Similar Sets of Foundations When Comparing Moral Violations, and it's currently available on Early View in the American Political Science Review on their website. And the other is called Polarization Over the Priority of Political Problems. It's not available yet, but Jack, it will be published soon, if am I right in thinking that?
I think it was published yesterday.
Oh, fantastic. Amazing. So we will make sure there is a link to that. So it's in the American Journal of Political Science, and the full details will be in the show notes for the episode. Next week, we're exploring fairly similar questions, in fact, but in a totally different way. We will be looking at what the Confucian value of harmony can teach us about how to communicate across deep disagreement. To make sure you don't miss out on that or other future episodes of UCL Uncovering Politics, all you need to do is subscribe. You can do so on Apple, Google Podcasts, or whatever podcast provider you use. And while you're there, we'd love it if you could take a moment of time to rate or review us too. I'm Alan Rennick. This episode was produced by Eleanor Kingwell Banham and Kaiser Kang. Our theme music is written and performed by John Mann. This has been UCL Uncovering Politics. Thank you for listening.